The Helicopters are a band that have loomed over our band since day one. By the time we got going, the Helicopters had already been on the scene for 2 years. Their influence, their importance, should never be overlooked. Despite their long absence, one can't simply regard them as a footnote to a forgotten scene. They were monumentally important when it came to the survival of rock and roll during the lean 90s and early 2000s, renewing it, recharging it, reclaiming it, and pushing it forward. The Helicopters linked entire scenes together, entire genres together, and entire continents together. They were the bridge, much like Motorhead had been, within the hard music community that made rock and roll palatable for metalheads. Of course, largely through the association of Nicky Anderson's other band, Entombed. Punk rockers, garage punk rockers, and rock and rollers alike gravitated to their sound. That's why when our band gets flack from self-appointed know-it-all metalheads or pretentious punk rockers, I quietly chalk it up to their deficient scene knowledge and their obvious need to buy and listen to more records. But of course, that's one of the reasons I do this podcast, to kind of even up the weighing scale, so to speak. I find that despite there being some great blogs out there, some great writers, great websites, there is a deluge, an inextricable amount of idiocy online that often crosses over from being total bullshit to suddenly unmitigated truth. Whether it's flung in our direction or another band's direction, at least I have this platform to straighten shit out, to get on my soapbox and or bang the drum for anything or anyone I find worth noting. And that's why it's such a pleasure to have Dragan on this podcast for a third time. Dragan is the lead guitarist in the Backyard Babies. Recently, back in 2013, he released his first solo album, simply entitled Dragan, and of course co-founded and played lead guitar in the Helicopters. After steadfastly refusing to reunite the original Helicopters lineup, this year, 2016, they finally conceded. It seemed fitting since there were anniversaries coinciding, and even though the Helicopters proper only split in 2008, this original lineup, and what is considered to be the essence and spirit of the band and its accompanying scene, hadn't performed together in 18 years. By now, it's old news that the Helicopters reunited at this year's Sweden Rock Festival to commemorate the 20th anniversary of their debut classic album, Super Shitty to the Max, and then again for this year's Esquina Rock Festival in Spain. Both festivals are always well curated and well organized. In fact, we've played both festivals a couple of times each. The first time Dragan appeared on this podcast, episode number 54, in 2013, he was on the cusp of launching a new career as a solo artist. It was very fortunate and very exciting to catch him at this moment. Last year, 2015, he returned again on episode number 106, in the middle of a tour, having returned to the Backyard Babies, armed with a new album from the band called 4x4. For this episode, he appears again on the eve of yet another venture, the Helicopters reunion, kind of bringing it full circle. So while in Stockholm this past June, I met up with Dragan at his place, 10 days before the Helicopters played Sweden Rock for the reunion show and hours before an intensive Helicopters rehearsal gearing up for said show. As you will hear, Dragan was in good spirits that day, excited and nervous for these Helicopters gigs that eventually made everyone summer, played without a hitch, and as of now, there is just one more show that they have yet to do at next year's Shock Festival in Belgium. The Shock Festival is a great rock and roll festival that we had the privilege of playing this year with the Nomads, Radio Birdman, and Kid Congo Powers. Anyway, this episode also marks Dragan's third appearance and thus inducts him into the Black Coffee Brigade, a very, very select group of people who have the distinction of being on this podcast three times or more. Other members include, of course, Nick Flanagan, Ole Berlin, our webmaster and caretaker of this podcast, Damian Abraham, Brendan Canning, Duff McKagan, Barrett Martin, Jim Rhoda, Wade McNeil, and JC from our band. I've known Dragan now for 15 years, toured with him, played with him, but hanging with the man is probably my favorite thing to do. Here you get a peek, and now that all the hoopla connected with the Helicopters reunion has died down a bit, I think it's perfect timing to start pumping it up again. Thanks to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. This podcast supports Chino Loco's restaurants, Nippon Sopa, Strofe Waffles, and Three's Company Reruns. Sit back, relax, and enjoy, because Dragan is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-op, download for free. I'm so glad I like to sometime. Damien from fucked up, stop playing, hang down, down. The Danko Jones podcast is simply superb, splendidly fine, wonderfully wild, very divine.
Danko Jones podcast, with a finger on the pulse of what's going on culturally in the world. Wait a second. That's not his finger.
I feel it's absolutely compulsory for you to listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Many times, Liz and I camped out in front of our Fisher 500 hi-fi receiver, hanging on Danko's every word. It's what we used for inspiration when we both starred in Under Milkwood. We even got Peter hooked by the end of the production. Peter O'Toole, that is. I implore you to go now and listen to Danko expound on subject matter most of us don't even think twice about. Listen to him turn anything into podcast gold. It's simply fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No!
All right, here we go.
Yep.
I'm at Stockholm, Dragan's place. Mm-hmm. And the last time I saw you, you were on top of Handsome Dick Manitoba's shoulders in Eindhoven for Speedfest. That's the last time I saw you.
Oh.
And you were photobombing every photo I took with the dictators.
I know. That was a wild night.
I've got photos of Ross the Boss, and then you're in the back.
yeah.
But how's it going, man? This is crazy. This is like, first of all, this is the third time you're on the podcast,
yes.
Which means you are now officially a member of the Black Coffee Brigade, a very esteemed club with members. Exactly.
Right now.
Damian Abraham from Fucked Up, Brendan Canning from Broken Social Scene, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, Barrett Martin, just the Wade McNeil, the list is endless. Not endless, it's actually very short. So congratulations and thank you for being on the podcast for a third time.
Thank you, Danko, and it's an honor to be here for the third time.
Every single time I've noticed we do a podcast, it's the start of something new with you. The first time was fresh from the studio for your solo album and your upcoming autobiography, which was released. That was 2 years ago. Last year, you were kind of just starting the 4x4 summer festival tour with the Backyard Babies reunion tour cycle, etc. And now, because I see your Facebook posts and everything, new Helicopters 12-inch, new reunion, one-off reunion gig at Sweden Rock with the Helicopters, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an exciting summer. And, you know, and also, of course, we kind of like finishing off the 4x4 Backyard Babies album with summer festivals. And we're going to Japan in September. But then I kind of like declare that album as dead. Right. And we're going to start with something new, you know. But there's a lot of things. I mean, you know, for me right now, it's more digging in, because it's like more or less like 10 days until the Swedish, Sweden Rock Festival with the helicopters. But I mean, I didn't think that it should be kind of like easy. It's, you know, it's punk rock, but, you know, when we started, you know, some of the, we're going to, it's 20 years since our debut album, Super Shitty to the Max, came out. So we're going to celebrate that. So we that's like the new shit we're going to play. And then we're going to dig into some older stuff because we did tons of like 7 inches before we actually, you know, we had a big band meeting back in 96 if we actually going to do an album, because we kind of thought it was a sellout thing to do an album. That was so it's pretty amazing that we actually are headlining Sweden Rock awesome. Festival.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, this new 12-inch that what's it on? Psych Out Records?
Yeah, it's on Psych Out Records, distributed by Sound Pollution.
Sound Pollution.
Yeah. Right. And Psych Out Records were, you know, that was, well, it's more or less Nicky's label, what, you know. Nick Anderson, the singer, and that was where we, you know, released our first 7-inch album. I mean, single 7.
Right, and these two songs are kind of older songs that you guys have held back from those super shitty days, right?
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, we were thinking, you know, we knew that we were going to do this gig, but at the same time, we were all excited, of course, of doing it, and then it would be fun to release something, but then at the same time, you know, we haven't played for a long time, and then starting to, you know, write new music and stuff. I think it's hard to, because we're not really in, you know, in that state of mind as we were in 96 with Super Shitty, and then it would maybe, you know, just would feel uncomfortable to, I don't know, you know, but then we started to dig. We had a song just before, kind of like I left the band, that we always did live, a song called My Mephistophelian Creed. And I was just like, why don't we record it, you know? It was like, you know, worked out really good live. And then we have Robert, a drummer. He was always like a rehearsal geek. He had like a little cassette recorder, and he always taped our rehearsals. And then he checked out, I don't know how many, like tons of tapes. And then he found a song that nobody remembered that we had, that we rated for the Super Shitty album. It's called Don't Stop Now. And then we took those two songs and went in the studio and recorded it like 20 years later.
Yeah.
And the rules were like, you know, that, oh, fuck, maybe, I shouldn't say that we, you know, but, you know, you develop as a songwriter or you know, maybe it's like, fuck, it should be like a B there instead of a C. But that the rules were like, no, you got to keep it as they were like in 96.
Right. It still is a very, I mean, compared to Super Shitty, it's a very polished recording compared to the time period that, you know, produced Super Shitty. But I think the songs pretty much stand the test of time. And it's kind of like, I liken this whole thing to like when Kiss kind of did their thing, and it still stands the test of that early era of the band. And with you, I think the reunion is, even though the Helicopters have only been officially broken up for just a few years, it's you rejoining Nicky that I think is, it's kind of like when, you know, Ace joins up with Paul and Gene, that's when people go, oh, it's a reunion, rather than, you know, Tommy joining or Eric joining again, or even if Bruce were to rejoin the band, it would just be like, oh, Bruce is playing with them, rather than it's a reunion.
Yeah.
So this, I think it really marks something. And I think Sweden Rock, you know, you guys are, carrying the festival this year, right?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, kind of.
Sorry for pressure.
No. No, but, you know, to be honest with you, they've been in contact with us for a lot of years as well, asking, and we're like, it's never going to happen, you know. Right. So at the same time, I got to, like, you know, at the same time, we kind of, like, you know, we thought it would be a sellout to do an album. Of course, like, it is a money issue involved as well. They called and called, and then kind of like me and Nicky, we were on tour together with my solo album and Imperial State Legacy. We did a co-headline tour in Europe, and then they kind of like didn't offer again, and we were like, you know, you got to stop it. We won't get out of bed if we won't get. And there's like, finally, they're never going to call again. And next morning they call. and said, yeah. And we were like, fuck, we have a gig.
All right, let's go.
Yeah.
That's great, man. I think, I mean, everybody's talking about it, and I think it'll be a really, really, I wish I was there, but I'm sure it'll be fucking phenomenal. I'm sure everybody's...
Yeah, I've done a lot of interviews, and everybody's like, hey, it's just a one-off, right? Ning, blink, blink, you know, like, but it is just like one show, and nothing else is booked, but, for me, the helicopters is a very important, I love the guys, it was never like that we had a fallout on each other or anything. It was just a luxury problem that, Backyard Baby was flying at the same time and I didn't have time for it. So of course I'm hoping maybe, you never know in the future if there's going to be, it depends on how this show goes.
I guess. I know everybody's talking about, oh, this is, and I made the mistake on Instagram yesterday. Someone said, I can't remember the thread, but I said, yeah, the reunion shows, they're back together. They're doing these reunion shows. Mm. And people were like, shows? Yeah. I thought it was just this one show. And I'm like, oh, shit, I don't want to start something. So I had to go back and go, no, it's this one show on Sweden Rock. What people kind of lose sight of sometimes is, Nikki's got Imperial State, but you have, this solo career now. Mm-hmm. And with the success of the first album, you are starting the cycle of the second record, the follow-up?
Yeah, I tweeted it like this is going to be my only album, like something that I wanted to do, but, I have a great time with the Backyard Babies, and I'm super excited about the helicopters, and actually I'm psyched to start writing a new solo album as well. So, yeah, it was not something I hated, but I guess it's I have kind of like two, like a split personality in that thing. I'm a Gemini, like I'm a June kid, so I enjoy. Both of it, I enjoyed being like, it put way more pressure on me, I think, as a solo artist, because, if like a song turns out to be shit or a mix or whatever, it's my fault, but with the Backyard Babies, even if I am, we're running this together, I can always, blame Johan. It's the bass player's fault, like in a band. And also sometimes, it was when success came or something, you don't really have, anyone to celebrate with when you're solo. And when when things goes bad, you can't really, that's what I like with being in a team, kind of like in a band as well. Mm-hmm. But I like both things. But, I think that now with Backyard Babies, we proved the point that, we can kind of like have Backyard Babies as some kind of like, mothership that you can, and then we can do other stuff apart from that,
How was the tour at the end? I mean, I caught you last time you were on here, it was in the middle, or you were just starting the cycle, and now that everything's gone through, a couple of tours have passed, all the summer festivals are done, how was it with those guys? Is it going to be, now that this cycle's over, are you going to start another cycle right away? The solo albums here?
I don't really know, but I think that we're gonna start write and see what.
So there is gonna be a writing.
Yeah. There's gonna be another Backyard Babies album for sure. And it's kind of like, we've been together for such a long time as well, and everybody enjoys, being in the band, and.
It was a different vibe.
Yeah.
When we caught up with you guys at Southside and Hurricane, everyone was more relaxed. Maybe you guys were just so fucking jet lagged from flying everywhere, but I just noticed everybody was kind of just more relaxed than the last time I saw you guys all together.
It's been, and everybody, during this, maybe we talked about it last time, but also like during this break from the band, it was like 4 years. Well, people think it's 5 years, but we started to write and all that, but more or less like 4 years from each other, it was not just that we were, you know, road worn and stuff like that. I think that, you know, a lot of like socially things has been happening like during that time as well. People got, you know, married and got kids and found a place to live and stuff. Like before that, like since we were like 16 or something, we just been on a fucking on tour all the time, you know. So I think that people are more like, you know, comfortable in their lives now, and now we can start like in next leg of Backyard Babies. And Nicky's like, he's sober now, and you know, well, I guess that everybody's like, I can't really cope with, you know. I think that the day after Speedfest, we had a day off, so. Yeah.
Did you need that, Dave?
I think so.
I think so too, yeah. You guys. So this new solo album, is it going to be with Pear again? Is like, what do you got going on? Because I remember the last time you guys brought us into the studio, and I don't know if I told you, I probably did, but JC and I left the studio fucking charged. We wanted to just drop off the tour and start working on our next record, because it was, you know, it was really cool to listen to all the songs, and I thought we both thought they were amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I want to do this with Pear as well, and we just need to find time but I mean to nowadays as well, you know, I think that my next record is gonna. Now when we've been working together, I think that, you know, having Pear as like the producer of it, I don't need to, you know, just shut off everything else I do and just go in to record in the studio. Right. I can kind of like just, you know, go from here and there and record a little bit there. And also, I mean, you were one of the few guests on my first solo album, which were, you know... You know, my first idea was that, you know, I was like, oh my God, I can sing this album. I need to have guest singers and stuff. But then at the same time, it's like, fucking, I wrote some good songs here. And you know, I think that to getting maybe more like superstars to guest, it kind of takes the attention of, I really wanted to prove that I can do this by myself on the first one. But I think that, you know, I think that it would be a lot of fun to have more kind of like guests. So... I mean, I haven't started yet, but I'm kind of, you know, thinking that direction, you know. But I'm more self-confident in my vocals as well now. But, you know, maybe you can even have guest drummers, bass players, guitarists, kind of like make it more of a that kind of vibe on the next album.
I always thought your vocals were amazing, stellar, and exactly what a rock and roll singer should sound like, you know. And I know all your... You're kind of like Peter or Ace in the Backyard Babies. You were relegated to, you're that one song. But that one song really, a lot of times, was one of my favorites off the whole entire record. So, but I know you also said to me, and it kind of resonated with me because I was like, is that what... It got me moving, actually, when you said you don't want to be handcuffed to the mic stand. Yeah. And I'm like, am I... And then I'd see... like shows of ours, I'm like, I'm fucking handcuffed to the mic stand. Yeah. So I try as much as I can to like go in the middle of the stage. But when you said that to me on one tour we did together, I was like, fuck, he's kind of right. Like, you know, is that something that I'm not kind of aware of? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really that aware. Now I'm very self-conscious about it. If I'm on the mic stand too much, I need to walk over. Even the last show we played, it was the first show in 4 months.
Yeah.
And I was right by the mic stand. Yeah. And I was like, fuck, I gotta get over to JC's side. So I finally did it, and I've almost flubbed the first line of the song. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, it is. But also in this break we had for 4 years, I joined Michael Monroe's band, and I recorded.
Fuck, there's that.
I recorded and wrote together with the guys the album Horns and Halos.
Which was his return. I mean, much splash return, big splash.
And that was a great experience too. Then I was, you know, feeling so, because then I was only playing guitar and a little backup vocals, and I love that. And then at the same time, I wanted to show that I can sing. You know, it's kind of like,
yeah. I think there's a contingent of people who follow what you do, myself included, that we're just going, yeah, just get on the fucking mic now. Yeah. Just start doing it. It makes sense.
Yeah, I think it has something to do, even if we don't want to say it, like you're a lead singer, I became some kind of a, you know, I'm there as well, and you know, but to be honest with you, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a drummer. But I somewhere in my head, I understood that, you know, I can't get that.
Same here.
That you know, I can't sit back there. It's impossible for me, even though I you know, I'm a drum freak. That's what I am, you know.
I always watch the drummer.
Yeah.
Watching Peter is...
Yeah. So, yeah, with that said, you know, I think there's some kind of an ego that wants to get out, you know, to...
I think you and I would be the same if we were in the drums. Yeah. We'd stand up.
Yeah, exactly.
Walk around the kit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think Lars Ulrich.
Yeah.
He's the one drummer I see stand up the most. I'm like, dude, just grab the mic. No, I hear you, man. I think there's like always tension between a drummer and a frontman. At least I've felt it in our band. We've gone through many drummers. But I feel like the drummer always wants to be the frontman. I don't think it works the other way too much. Because once you have a taste of the front, you're like, oh, the drums are... But I'm not sitting in the back there.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is that push and pull, I think.
But I mean, everything I've been doing, now I'm so like spoiled with playing with great, what I think great drummers, as in, you know, like Nicky Anderson, he did my solo thing, and you know, like Robert with the Helicopters and Peter.
Yeah.
Carl Rockfist and Michael Monroe and stuff like that. But sometimes when I've been guesting where there's a great drummer, but he doesn't really like fly, or he doesn't have any personality, I also become a worse guitarist, I think. So you know, I don't know if my style, I mean, I'm always like, I treat myself almost like, they always talk about bass players and drummers, you know, as the rhythm, but you know, I'm, you know, if there's some connection with me, it's always with the drummer.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking a lot of like, you know, my guitar playing is always connecting a lot with what the drums are playing.
Yeah, so. I feel it too. I feel it too. I can really steadily see how I didn't have a good time when the drums were not up to my standard.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's like going around with the nicest car you have and you can shut up, but you know, when you push that fucking gas pedal, it doesn't move, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a
you
good...
You know, it's like the fucking engine of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I feel that too. Is there anything going on with Michael Monroe? Like, what's...
No, well, I mean, you know, we still be in contact with all the guys. So, you know, I guess, that, you know, some of the guys from Michael Monroe, hopefully, if they want to, you know, is going to be included in my next solo album. And we always said that, you know, if we can find time, I would more than love to, you know, be involved writing with them and stuff. Because it's the same thing, it was nothing to have with the fallout or anything, you know. Michael knew already when I, you know, took the job as his guitarist that Backyard Babies is going to be back, and I'm going to have, you know, and then I have to... But now I left it over to another Toronto guy, I think, like Rich Jones from Black Halos.
Yeah, I think he's Vancouver, yeah. I think the Black Halo guys... They're scattered everywhere. There's some guys in Toronto, some guys out in BC. Yeah. I think I met one recently, but I can't.
They did a reunion tour, I think, in Spain, like the Black Halos did a Spanish
just
tour.
Just in Spain.
Yeah,
because Rock lives in Spain.
Yeah.
So now, what happens when you come up with a riff on guitar, and you're like, "This is a great riff"? Do you slot it? Do you know which now that you have these multiple paths, like, what do you do? Like, is that a crisis in a way?
No, it's not, because, you know, I think I just throw it into that, you know, whatever project is closest.
You could feel like, oh, I could hear Nicky
but I can fucking...
No, but I mean, to really stretch it like black and white, it's more, you know... I'm grown up listening to a lot of black music, like, you know, blues music and Delta, like, you know, Robert Johnson and, you know, John Lee Hooker and all that. And maybe, I mean, even with, you know, like, for Backyard Babies and even, you know, what we were with the Helicopters, sonic punk, right? You know, that kind of thing, I could never really... That kind of songwriting, and I did that for like Flat Tire on the Muddy Road, all my solo
right,
album.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm right. gonna start, you know, go somewhere more that I can't do with, you know, Backyard Babies. So.
The Flat Tire, that album, that song, when you played that for me and John, yeah. JC, yeah. in the studio,
yeah.
like I was like, holy fuck, this is it.
Yeah.
And you are gonna continue in that vein. That's a good.
Yeah, I think, you know, decision. And that's something that I, you know, always wanted to do as well. You know, it sounds, I think it's time to kind of like, you know, I don't know. Blues is kind of like almost like a word that, you know, almost is, you know, has a reputation as rap metal in a way, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, people exactly like, you know, like blues, but hey, blues, it's the coolest fucking thing.
Yeah.
You can play, but it's not easy to you know.
I think it's been appropriated and it's just been suburbanized.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I'm in a blues band. It's like, hey, but there's no fucking blues in your blues
it's
band.
Like
you
shopping
know,
malls.
Yeah, I know, and it's been kind of like what do you call it, watered out in a yeah. way, you know. So
like accountants who ride Harleys on the weekends in a leather jacket.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that you know that might be a mission to take. Take it back.
Yeah, right. Flat Tire. I mean, oh my God. Like, yeah, on so many levels, it was such a great. Yeah, and it, yeah, you know, now I think about it, it wouldn't have belonged on a Backyard Babies album.
No.
It would only belong on your album.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's such a great road to, oh man. No, I looked at your solo album. I remember that. When you played it to us in the studio, and I was like, wow, he's got everything in front of him. He can go anywhere now.
Yeah.
And it was, I was envious of that because we were stuck in the situation we were in at the time. We weren't a happy band.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw you with everything laid out in front of you. It was great for, I was happy for you. And I was happy that the solo album and the book, you know, did what it did for you. And it was great. But that is what I'm hoping for is a continuation of that. That would be cool.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, everybody's kind of like, you know, you got to like look at the whole music industry as, you know, I'm looking at it as not half empty, it's half full, you know, like in a positive way, because, you know, when we started the Backyard Babies back in 89, it was either, you know, more like you're either into that kind of, you know, music or genres or, you know, like, and it feels like the a sad thing, I think, is that if we call them the kids or whatever, like the fan, or kind of like they everything goes so fast now, like they don't listen to albums. They, you know, it's more like songs and stuff. But I think that's just like everything comes in trends, I guess, you know. I think that if you look at the movie industry as well as, you know, music industry, when I was growing up, it was kind of like, I was young and I was like, fuck these, you know, you thought that the movies was kind of like slow and running, like, and then, you know, like that whole thing with like, you know, Jonas Åkerlund and music videos, and it was like fucking 1,000 clips per second, you know, like that thing was for years, and a movie was like 1.5 hours, and it was so much fast clips and stuff. And now, kind of with Netflix and all the TV series, like now we're back to almost like the 50s, 60s again with like long fucking scenes with nothing really happening, you know?
Right.
And I think that might be, I don't think, you know, I think that kids, when they find whatever, like the album format again, I think they're going to get back to listening to albums.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
I hope you're right.
But I mean, I don't know. Now we're kind of like sliding out of the subject, but I'm thinking that, what was I thinking? Fucking hell. That they kind of like, it's not just, you know, kids, they're not listening to albums that much, but you know, it's not, you know, they could fucking listen to Poison ID and you know, be, you know, digging some NWA, and you know, like they're not so like when I was growing up, it was either you listen to Kiss and Motley Crue, you can't listen to anything else, you know. Yeah. And that's a good sign for me because I enjoy a lot of different kind of music as long as it's good, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree. But then I go, do you know how fucking hard it was to listen to this music that you guys just walk right through and listen to it? I mean, I'd you know, not hide what I listen to sometimes, but I didn't exactly tell everybody.
No, it was more exactly.
And I see, like, with the vinyl explosion and everything, I mean, it's great. It's keeping the album format alive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like,
But it's Beatles, like a lot of these, like even with the helicopter, I wonder how many that actually are spinning on 45. You know, it's a lot of them are, you know, dusted in some bookshelf. Sure. Yeah.
There's a great Instagram thing, and it's called Punk Rock, the Punk Rock News, and it's just fake headlines. So there's one guy. It's a picture of a guy with a turntable, and he goes. Purchased after years of buying vinyl, purchases first turntable. Like, you know, that's the kind of sentiment I think people have with vinyl. But for me, it was it's not furniture to me or something to put on the wall. Because it used to be the cheapest way to buy music because you could buy four records for $20, and now you can't even buy a record for $20. It kind of. It's increased in value. Like I realized my collection just suddenly, I bought it thinking that it was going to decrease in value. And then suddenly I was like, holy shit, this thing must be worth four times more than when I bought it. Yeah. So,
and I have another, it might be a little like, you know, hippie thinking, but you know, since I became a father as well, it's kind of like, if I fucking drop dead in 1 hour here, you know, like, you know, fathers out there or musicians even like, okay, they listen to Spotify or whatever the stream service is. And then, you know, you don't really left anything. Like, when the kids are growing up, it's like, what was my dad? What was his music? You know, like, are they going to find some fucking hard drive or, like, a link what they were, like, listening to? You know, it's kind of like, you know, something that you leave after yourself. That they is something, you know, like a physical thing to... It's more of a, you know... like your legacy in a way, like
I can see that, and plus if you leave it on a drive.
I found my grandpa's old Spotify account, and I, you know, and then it's like, oh, he was listening to, you know.
Yeah. What's this folder? Triple XXX.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Beside the music folder.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and I could see all the vinyl you have, and I know that this vinyl gets played.
Yeah.
You know, like I know that.
You know, I got married, half of it is actually soul, or I did like a really, you know, I was like, you know, like Kill Your Darlings when I moved to this place as well, selling this. And then when you look at it, like my fucking CD records are in a big fucking, just, I don't know when I opened that the last time. So CD for me is actually totally dead. If there's nothing on, it's not that, you know, I'm complaining. I love, as a touring musician, I actually love stream music as well. Because, you know, it's instant in a good way. Like, if you and me are, you know, talking about some new band or whatever, like when it was, you know, when you had to go out and buy that, you know, in 3 days I forgot about the name of the band. Yeah. And, you know, you have to do it. Now I can, like, instant check them out, you know.
Yeah.
And also when you tour, you know, I remember... We actually had a vinyl player with us on tour in the beginning.
Really?
Back in the back lounge. And then, you know, you had like a fucking, or, you know, like a big DJ bag with your stage clothes. You know, you don't really have to do that anymore. But I mean, I buy records as well on tour, but it's convenient touring musician that you have like everything in your laptop or iPhone or phone.
Yeah, I mean, I still buy CDs.
Yeah.
I still, because I can, but then I only to import it into my computer and have it on iTunes, so when I'm on tour,
I bought one of these new fucking computers, and I was shocked when I came on. So I said, it's so lightweight. It's like, oh my God, where's the C? There was no C. What? That's the worst fucking thing they've done, like Apple.
Yeah, I think so too. If you're a Mac user. It's an extended,
so you can plug
extended CD player, which sucks.
Yeah.
because I don't think it's very well made. But if it's the only way I can do it, then I'll do it. And it's very inexpensive compared to the rest of the computer. I think they sell it for $80.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's you could tell they're just like trying to phase it out.
Yeah.
And when they do, I guess my CDs are, I'm fucked. Yeah. But what are you going to do? I'm sure they'll come up with some sort of thing, just the way you can import cassettes into your computer.
Yeah.
So.
No, but with that said, I think like in 100 years from now, I can swear that you can still go out and buy an LP, I think, a vinyl. But I don't think that, CDs, I think that, that kind of like thing is over, because it's not that I hate CDs. I just think it's not like a, it's not such a 100% kind of piece of art that a vinyl is.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. The plastic casing, how easy it gets broken. Yeah. It's not attractive. If a record is really, it's so. And I grew up in that era when people would, when I was a kid, I'd see older, like teenagers, with records under their arms, and I've always been charmed by that.
Yeah.
And so I still love doing it. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I try to play records, two or three a day.
Yeah.
It's hard, but it, especially when you're on tour, but, and with an iPad and iTunes, it's easy to just, go in. But I mean, I buy just as much records as I did back then, just takes a longer time to get to them.
Yeah.
There's a stack of to listen. I have a crate right by my record player of to listen to crate that I have to still go through. So, but yeah. That's how it is. But yeah, man. Oh, it's nice to be here at your place here in Stockholm. It's fucking, it's cool.
Glad to have you here.
Thanks, man. Well, this has been great. I'm glad we touched base while I'm in Stockholm and
Always great seeing you.
Eve of the Helicopters reunion. Now, this is going to air after you guys have played, so I will say that was a great show, man. Yeah. I saw it on YouTube.
Thank you.
It was amazing. Cool, man. Fuck, great. And I look forward to the new record, the new solo album, and God knows what else is coming down through the pipe. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Awesome. And thank you. You are now the newest member of the Black Coffee Brigade.
Yeah.